Escuelas oficiales de idiomas de Andalucía. Comprensión oral. Inglés. Nivel intermedio B2. Tarea 1. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract.
Zero.
The good news, of course, is that there are some simple shifts that we can make that are really impactful. So I want to give you the opportunity to share some practical and actionable steps that teachers can take in their classroom today to start reducing waste.
There are so many just really quick, easy things that don't add to your workload really almost at all. That can really, really help shift your mindset and your kids' mindsets.
Extract.
One.
The first step, I think, in doing this in your classroom is to do a waste audit. So if you can separate your food waste from everything else, I mean, ideally, you could start a compost. But even if you can separate like 2 trash cans in your classroom, you can start to take a look at what kind of trash is coming out of your classroom. And that gives you a really easy starting place to notice like, wow, I'm putting in 15 antibacterial wipes after we clean our tables, you know, every other day or every Friday or whatever.
Extract.
Two.
And a super easy switch from that is to just get a giant pack of washcloths and then just use all-purpose spray and washcloths to clean the tables. And then those just go in a dirty laundry basket and they're washed and reused. And the ones in my classroom are now being reused on their third year or fourth year, and you know, they show 0 signs of wear.
Extract.
Three.
Yeah, another really quick thing that I started doing that really cuts down on, I think, not necessarily the waste, but the impact of our classroom is I started collecting copies that I mess up or like extra prints that I make too many of. When they're one-sided, and then I just have a shelf where I store all of those. And then when I have a one-sided copy, I just put that in the copier, like in my copier, it's the blank side goes up, and then I copy the whatever sheet that I need onto that side, and I tell my kids, ignore the other side. That's, I would say, you know, cutting my paper use in half at least.
Extract.
Four.
Wow, that is so cool. Okay, this is good. Keep going. Give us some more ideas.
Yeah. And I also just stopped laminating a lot of stuff. I realized I was laminating things that I was hanging on my walls, and why? It made them shiny and a glare, and then it made it less accessible for the kids in my room to use as a resource. I started to think about how I could make paper durable and easy for kids to handle without laminating it. And I started to collect cereal boxes from students' families. So I just have kind of an ongoing, like when you have an empty cereal box, send it in. And then if you glue paper to cereal boxes and cut out whatever it is, it's really pretty durable. I use wet glue, I should say, not glue sticks.
Extract.
Five.
And then some of the bigger switches that I made were on my school supply list. I stopped asking for supplies, and I just said, write our school a check for $20. And then using that pot of money, I purchased folders and notebooks and whatever else I need that year. And I discovered that every kid doesn't need a new set of crayons every single year. Every kid does not need to bring in a new set of scissors. We don't even need like colored pencils and markers every single year. That's some of the debris that's just getting tossed out over and over and over again.
Extract.
Six.
This was a huge one for me. I got a reusable set of dishes for all our classroom parties. So I just, from IKEA, got like the cheapest little kids' wear plates and forks and spoons and cups. And now every time we have a party, I let the parents know, don't bring in any utensils or plates or anything. We have all of that. And I mean, at this point, those are 3 years old, and they've saved hundreds of disposables from going straight into the trash. And
dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract.
Zero.
The good news, of course, is that there are some simple shifts that we can make that are really impactful. So I want to give you the opportunity to share some practical and actionable steps that teachers can take in their classroom today to start reducing waste.
There are so many just really quick, easy things that don't add to your workload really almost at all, that can really, really help shift your mindset and your kids' mindsets.
Extract.
One.
The first step, I think, in doing this in your classroom is to do a waste audit. So if you can separate your food waste from everything else, I mean, ideally, you could start a compost. But even if you can separate like two trash cans in your classroom, you can start to take a look at what kind of trash is coming out of your classroom. And that gives you a really easy starting place to notice like, wow, I'm putting in 15 antibacterial wipes after we clean our tables, you know, every other day or every Friday or whatever.
Extract.
Two.
And a super easy switch from that is to just get a giant pack of washcloths and then just use all-purpose spray and washcloths to clean the tables. And then those just go in a dirty laundry basket and they're washed and reused. And the ones in my classroom are now being reused on their third year, I think, third year or fourth year. And, you know, they show zero signs of wear.
Extract.
Three.
Yeah, another really quick thing that I started doing that really cuts down on, I think, the not necessarily the waste, but the impact of our classroom is I started collecting copies that I mess up or like extra prints that I make too many of when they're one-sided. And then I just have a shelf where I store all of those. And then when I have a one-sided copy, I just put that in the copier, like in my copier, it's the blank side goes up and then I copy the whatever sheet that I need onto that side. And I tell my kids, ignore the other side. That's, I would say, you know, cutting my paper use in half, at least.
Extract.
Four.
Wow, that is so cool. Okay, this is good. Keep going. Give us more ideas.
Yeah. And I also just stopped laminating a lot of stuff. I realized I was laminating things that I was hanging on my walls. And why? Mm. It made them shiny and a glare. And then it made it less accessible for the kids in my room to use as a resource. I started to think about how I could make paper durable and easy for kids to handle without laminating it. And I started to collect cereal boxes from students' families. So I just have kind of an ongoing, like when you have an empty cereal box, send it in. And then if you glue paper to cereal boxes and cut out whatever it is, it's really pretty durable. I use wet glue, I should say, not glue stick.
Extract.
Five.
And then some of the bigger switches that I made were on my school supply list. I stopped asking for supplies and I just said, write our school a check for $20. And then using that pot of money, I purchased folders and notebooks and whatever else I need that year. And I discovered that every kid doesn't need a new set of crayons every single year. Every kid does not need to bring in a new set of scissors. We don't even need like colored pencils and markers every single year. That's some of the debris that's just getting tossed out over and over and over again.
Extract.
Six.
This was a huge one for me. I got a reusable set of dishes for all our classroom parties. So I just, from IKEA, got like the cheapest little kids wear plates and forks and spoons and cups. And now every time we have a party, I let the parents know, don't bring in any utensils or plates or anything. We have all of that. And I mean, at this point, those are 3 years old and they've saved hundreds of disposables from going straight into the trash. And
dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 1. Tarea 2. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Extract.
Zero.
For me, it was a catalog that showed up to my mom's house, and it was a smaller fair trade company based out of Madison, Wisconsin. And the company was trying to have fair trade options for clothing. And my mom knew I was interested in fair trade after college. And she knew that I had always been obsessed with fashion. And she's like, what about this? And for me, that was like the spark to, you know, research my face off and try to figure out what this all means.
Extract.
One.
Cotton is a natural fiber grown from the cotton plant. Polyester is a synthetic fiber, usually made from oil. It can take more than 200 years to decompose.
Extract.
Two.
The statistic about how much we buy and how much we throw away maybe is the most shocking. You know, we're buying four times as many things as we were in this country even 10 years ago, and we're wearing them for half the amount of time that we're wearing them for 10 years ago. So,
extract.
Three.
Right. But this is where one of the problems happens, is because people today obviously don't want just like perfect, you know, navy blue jeans. They want kind of vintagey looking jeans or slightly roughed up looking jeans. You know, they want to look like cowboys or, you know, hippies or whatever, which is fine. But obviously in the old days, people would just wear their jeans to make them look like that. But today, there are a number of very dangerous processes that are used to make jeans look faded.
Extract.
Four.
I'd say about 90% of my clothes are secondhand or vintage. For trend reasons, but mainly for environmental reasons, sustainability is a really important part of my life. Like, I've changed many aspects of my life because of it. I think it's really good that it's becoming a trend to be sustainable, because people are more aware.
Extract.
Five.
I personally was attracted to it through wanting to craft hopefully interesting outfits. And then recently I have been getting more motivated because of the reusing clothes argument, not going and buying a bunch of unnecessary fast fashion, cheaply produced stuff that has massive environmental impact from the high street every month.
Extract.
Six.
When we think about, you know, the labor practices that they use, also in developing countries where they're exploiting cheap labor and also as well as damaging the local environments. Those are the things that, you know, we can all do something about. What it seems like, oh, it's so far away from me. You know, I don't get ever to interact or see these people or visit these countries. But in fact, that you can actually, firsthand, you can actually make a difference.
Extract.
Seven.
I think where the marketplace is not necessarily screaming, I want sustainable product. I think we've seen with the successful brands that have infused a sustainable perspective, they've been very successful. So I would argue that if we can impress upon the bigger brands the customer desire for these products, it would actually cause the shift to be a little more exciting and maybe happen faster. But I do think it's not easy.
Extract.
Eight.
And I think what's been profound to me is just starting in small ways to make small changes, small adjustments in my life. You know, I think there's a feeling like, what good is my, you know, my personal habits, my personal buying patterns, my personal waste. But what's happened for me is this, as I've started to make some of those changes, and this is why I think fashion is really fascinating and profound, is those small adjustments that I began to make for me and my family, my kids, they have opened the door for a greater sense of empathy. Like, just the fact.
Extract.
Nine.
There's been a lot of excitement recently about clothing made from plastic water bottles, ocean plastic, and other upcycled plastic sources. While a lot of consumers may believe that purchasing these products is a responsible choice, clothing made of plastics of any kind will do more harm for the environment than good.
Extract.
10.
So whilst a low price tag might feel quite enticing, if you only wear it once or even 10 times, then maybe it's not as valuable as something that has been twice as expensive, but you've worn for 50 times, or maybe even worn for great number of years. Some people will wear things for 20 or 30 years, myself included.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Extract.
Zero.
For me, it was a catalog that showed up to my mom's house, and it was a smaller fair trade company based out of Madison, Wisconsin. And the company was trying to have fair trade options for clothing. And my mom knew I was interested in fair trade after college, and she knew that I had always been obsessed with fashion. And she's like, what about this? And for me, that was like the spark to, you know, research my face off and try to figure out what this all means.
Extract.
One.
Cotton is a natural fiber grown from the cotton plant. Polyester is a synthetic fiber, usually made from oil. It can take more than 200 years to decompose.
Extract.
Two.
The statistic about how much we buy and how much we throw away maybe is the most shocking. You know, we're buying four times as many things as we were in this country even 10 years ago, and we're wearing them for half the amount of time that we're wearing them for 10 years ago. So,
extract.
Three.
Right. But this is where one of the problems happens, is because people today obviously don't want just like perfect, you know, navy blue jeans. They want kind of vintagey looking jeans or slightly roughed up looking jeans. You know, they want to look like cowboys or, you know, hippies or whatever, which is fine. But obviously in the old days, people would just wear their jeans to make them look like that. But today there are a number of very dangerous processes that are used to make jeans look faded.
Extract.
Four.
I'd say about 90% of my clothes are secondhand or vintage. For trend reasons, but mainly for environmental reasons, sustainability is a really important part of my life. Like, I've changed many aspects of my life because of it. I think it's really good that it's becoming a trend to be sustainable, because people are more aware.
Extract.
Five.
I personally was attracted to it through wanting to craft hopefully interesting outfits. And then recently I have been getting more motivated because of the reusing clothes argument, not going and buying a bunch of unnecessary fast fashion, cheaply produced stuff that has massive environmental impact from the high street every month.
Extract.
Six.
When we think about, you know, the labor practices that they use, also in developing countries where they're exploiting cheap labor and also as well as damaging the local environments. Those are the things that, you know, we can all do something about. What it seems like, oh, it's so far away from me. You know, I don't get ever to interact or see these people or visit these countries. But in fact, that you can actually, firsthand, you can actually make a difference.
Extract.
Seven.
I think where the marketplace is not necessarily screaming, I want sustainable product. I think we've seen with the successful brands that have infused a sustainable perspective, they've been very successful. So I would argue that if we can impress upon the bigger brands the customer desire for these products, it would actually cause the shift to be a little more exciting and maybe happen faster. But I do think it's not easy.
Extract.
Eight.
And I think what's been profound to me is just starting in small ways to make small changes, small adjustments in my life. You know, I think there's a feeling like, what good is my, you know, my personal habits, my personal buying patterns, my personal waste. But what's happened for me is this: as I've started to make some of those changes, and this is why I think fashion is really fascinating and profound, is those small adjustments that I began to make for me and my family and my kids, they have opened the door for a greater sense of empathy. Like, the fact.
Extract.
Nine.
There's been a lot of excitement recently about clothing made from plastic water bottles, ocean plastic, and other upcycled plastic sources. While a lot of consumers may believe that purchasing these products is a responsible choice, clothing made of plastics of any kind will do more harm for the environment than good.
Extract.
10.
So whilst a low price tag might feel quite enticing, if you only wear it once or even 10 times, then maybe it's not as valuable as something that has been twice as expensive, but you've worn for 50 times, or maybe even worn for great number of years. Some people will wear things for 20 or 30 years, myself included.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 2. Tarea 3. Dispone de 2 minutos para leer las instrucciones y el contenido de la tarea.
Good evening. Most blind travellers would say the talking bus has been a great leap forward. A little over a year ago, the UK government launched its inclusive transport strategy, the aim to improve public transport accessibility for disabled passengers. Buses account for over half of all public transport journeys, and the government is now stumping up £2 million to provide audio equipment on more buses. This is the kit that tells you where you've reached on your journey, your next stop, and the final destination. We asked our bus-using reporter, Fern Lullum, to take a journey where buses with audio information are already in use.
I am sitting on a bus in Brighton, and for once in my life, I'm not anxiously counting the bus stops and wondering when my stop is coming up, and that's all because of this lovely lady.
The next stop is Brighton Station.
Having audio-visual equipment which tells you where you are and when your stop is coming up makes life so much easier when you're visually impaired. But this technology comes at a price, anywhere between £800 and £4,000 per bus, according to the Department for Transport. I wanted to find out whether Brighton and Hove Bus Company has found this to be a price worth paying for them.
My name is Victoria Garcia. I'm the Accessibility and Communities Manager at Brighton Hove Buses and Metrobus.
I think we would all applaud the great work that you've done to make public transport more accessible and the benefits that this has given disabled people. Does it also make sense commercially, Victoria?
Absolutely. 1 in 5 people in the UK are disabled. However, we're all going to have an accessibility requirement at some point in our lives, whether that be because we become pregnant or become older and start living well with dementia, or we've broken our arm or broken our leg. At some point, every one of the 100% of the population will have an accessibility requirement. So not to make our buses more accessible for disabled people just isn't viable at all.
And do you find that even sometimes people without disabilities, it's just helpful to have audio telling them where they are?
It is. So an example, if you're travelling at night, windows steam up, don't know where you are, taking the route for the first time, fantastic for tourists, for students, for somebody travelling to an area unknown to them, as well as for people with sight impairment. There is a cost involved and that has to be recognised.
Well, that's Fern Lullum in Brighton. And Fern took the opportunity while she was there to ask the Transport Minister, Nuz Ghani, about what the money they're putting up would be used for.
The £2 million is focused on those smaller bus companies that may not feel they've got the finances to put audiovisual in place.
Do you envisage using the law to ensure that all buses have audiovisual equipment installed in them?
We really want to work in partnership with bus companies and local authorities. But most bus companies understand to increase patronage, they need to provide up-to-date information and data, including on their buses. And if you want your bus passenger numbers to go up, this is the kind of kit that you need to put in service.
So is it mainly about cooperation, or could there be law enforcement if it needed it?
I think if we're unable to meet our inclusive transport strategy, then obviously we may have to look to legislate. But let's see how we work with bus companies. A lot of them are looking at how they can work with us to get this information up and running. And then we've got fantastic companies like Brighton Buses who are leading the way.
Well, Keith Richards chairs the Disabled Persons Transport Advisory Committee, known as DIPTAC, which does what it says on the tin, really, advises the government on transport. Keith, we know that talking bus technology is now being used in areas like, well, it's been in London for a long time now, Brighton, we heard, Bristol, Hampshire. But how well is the UK actually covered?
Well, not very well at all. Most buses in the country are not available with this kind of technology, and that's a real problem.
The government is offering this money to small companies. They appear to think that the big companies should be doing this themselves.
Yes, I mean, £2 million sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but actually it's a drop in the ocean in terms of what would be required to be spent across the whole sector, all buses, to bring them up to a standard. But it's good that it's being focused on those smaller operators, because those are the ones who are least likely to invest the money. I think the real thing that came out of your report was that there are real commercial reasons why this is being done already by the industry, and that is that it brings in more custom, and that's not just from disabled people, but from people who are visitors or otherwise anxious or confused when using public transport. But the law needs to change, it needs to be brought in, and this needs to be made compulsory.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Escuche de nuevo la grabación.
Good evening. Most blind travellers would say the talking bus has been a great leap forward. A little over a year ago, the UK government launched its inclusive transport strategy, the aim to improve public transport accessibility for disabled passengers. Buses account for over half of all public transport journeys, and the government is now stumping up £2 million to provide audio equipment on more buses. This is the kit that tells you where you've reached on your journey, your next stop, and the final destination. We asked our bus-using reporter Fern Lullum to take a journey where buses with audio information are already in use.
I am sitting on a bus in Brighton, and for once in my life, I'm not anxiously counting the bus stops and wondering when my stop is coming up, and that's all because of this lovely lady.
The next stop is Brighton Station.
Having audio-visual equipment which tells you where you are and when your stop is coming up makes life so much easier when you're visually impaired. But this technology comes at a price, anywhere between £800 and £4,000 per bus, according to the Department for Transport. I wanted to find out whether Brighton & Hove Bus Company has found this to be a price worth paying for them.
My name is Victoria Garcia. I'm the Accessibility and Communities Manager at Brighton & Hove Buses and Metro Bus.
I think we would all applaud the great work that you've done to make public transport more accessible and the benefits that this has given disabled people. Does it also make sense commercially, Victoria?
Absolutely. One in five people in the UK are disabled. However, we're all going to have an accessibility requirement at some point in our lives, whether that be because we become pregnant or become older and start living well with dementia, or we've broken our arm or broken our leg. At some point, every one of the 100% of the population will have an accessibility requirement. So not to make our buses more accessible for disabled people just isn't viable at all.
And do you find that even sometimes people without disabilities, it's just helpful to have audio telling them where they are?
It is. So an example, if you're travelling at night, window steam up, don't know where you are, taking the route for the first time, fantastic for tourists, for students, for somebody travelling to an area unknown to them, as well as for people with sight impairment. There is a cost involved and that has to be recognised.
Well, that's Fern Lullum in Brighton, and Fern took the opportunity while she was there to ask the Transport Minister, Nuz Ghani, about what the money they're putting up would be used for.
The £2 million is focused on those smaller bus companies that may not feel they've got the finances to put audiovisual in place.
Do you envisage using the law to ensure that all buses have audiovisual equipment installed in them?
We really want to work in partnership with bus companies and local authorities. But most bus companies understand to increase patronage, they need to provide up-to-date information and data, including on their buses. And if you want your bus passenger numbers to go up, this is the kind of kit that you need to put in service.
So is it mainly about cooperation, or could there be law enforcement if it needed it?
I think if we're unable to meet our inclusive transport strategy, then obviously we may have to look to legislate. But let's see how we work with bus companies. A lot of them are looking at how they can work with us to get this information up and running. And then we've got fantastic companies like Brighton Buses who are leading the way.
Well, Keith Richards chairs the Disabled Persons Transport Advisory Committee, known as DIPTAC, which does what it says on the tin, really, advises the government on transport. Keith, we know that talking bus technology is now being used in areas like, well, it's been in London for a long time now, Brighton, we heard, Bristol, Hampshire. But how well is the UK actually covered?
Well, not very well at all. Most buses in the country are not available with this kind of technology, and that's a real problem.
The government is offering this money to small companies. They appear to think that the big companies should be doing this themselves.
Yes, I mean, £2 million sounds like a lot of money to you and me, but actually it's a drop in the ocean in terms of what would be required to be spent across the whole sector, all buses, to bring them up to a standard. But it's good that it's being focused on those smaller operators, because those are the ones who are least likely to invest the money. I think the real thing that came out of your report was that there are real commercial reasons why this is being done already by the industry, and that is that it brings in more custom, and that's not just from disabled people, but from people who are visitors or otherwise anxious or confused when using public transport. But the law needs to change, it needs to be brought in, and this needs to be made compulsory.
Dispone ahora de un minuto para comprobar sus respuestas. Este es el final de la tarea 3. Aquí acaba la prueba de comprensión oral. Por favor, siga las instrucciones del profesorado en su aula.